we start today's episode, just to let you know, you can now nominate for the 2025 Northern Power Women Awards to be in with a chance of celebrating with changemakers, trailblazers and advocates on the 6th of March 2025. Nominate now at wearepower.net.
Northern Power Women Podcast. For your career and your life, no matter what business you're in.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the Northern Power Women Podcast, in association with the Cooperative Bank. On this bonus dose of Northern Power Women goodness, you'll get to hear our live panel discussion all about early careers and how they shape your later work and life. Plus, you'll meet Leslie McPherson, Director of Communications at the Cooperative Bank, and she has some brilliant advice for these very strange times. And of course, more of your brilliant Northern Power Women shout-outs. Will you get a mention? You better keep listening. So without further ado, let's have a listen to the great discussion that went down at Stoller Hall.
Welcome, welcome to a special edition of the Northern Power Women podcast. We are here today at it's fantastic, isn't it? The Stoller Hall. It's wonderful. So we're in a fantastic auditorium. I'm painting the scene. And we as the panel are sat on stage looking like we're about to perform. So we've got Joe, Tracy and Chris. And we've got someone on the drums, someone on percussion and someone on a guitar. We just haven't decided who. So it's a special edition today with the Cooperative Bank as part of our partnership. But our focus today is on early careers. And we always talk about Northern Power Women and Northern Power Futures starting a conversation. So let me introduce you to our stellar panel. Jo Mayer is the Managing Director of Customer Channels and has worked in financial services for almost 30 years, progressing from customer-facing activity to her current position of Managing Director of Customer Channels at the Cooperative Bank. Winner of Director of the Year at the CCA Awards 2018 and a member of the Christie's Patient Experience Committee, Jo is a highly motivated, dynamic senior leader who cares deeply about delivering results for customers and developing her team, and is also, it's not on here, but I'm adding it in, a member of the 2020 Northern Power Women Power List. So welcome, Jo. Secondly, we have Tracy Neller, who joined the bank at the end of 2015 and was appointed Chief People Officer in January 2017. She has more than 25 years of experience in senior HR roles, covering reward, talent development, and cultural programs across multiple sectors, including retail, leisure, technology, and financial services. Tracy has worked for a variety of international organisations, as well as in consultancy, and has a significant experience in the UK and strategic HR, and also has executive experience. Welcome, Tracy. And finally, but not last, Chris Davis is the Chief Operating Officer and has over 30 years banking experience. You combined have got a hell of an amount. Where are we? 30, 60, 85 years of banking experience. Does that sound awful? Sorry. Sorry to highlight that. Previously, Chris was Vice President at IBM, responsible for banking consultancy practice, and also held a series of high-profile banking COO roles at W&G, Ulster and RBS. He's qualified as a certified banking director and has been a NED at Chetwood Financial and chairman of Ulster Bank Commercial Services Limited. Welcome to our fantastic panel. We're going to start with our questions. And the first of our questions on today's panel is, can you remember a piece of advice you were given early in your career that stuck with you? Chris, let's start with you.
Actually, I can, and it's funny because I often talk about this when I'm coaching and mentoring people. The very first annual review I ever had at NatWest, and this is in 1988, just to sort of take you, that's how far ago we're talking about. I sat down, having really worked hard at my form, filled out all the things I needed to fill. And in those days, you had strengths and you had weaknesses. There was no sort of pretense around, you know, whether it was good or bad. And I being diligent, I thought I need to look at all these weaknesses. And I listed all these things I was going to do to address them and get better. And I went in and, I was 21 years old, nervous, first job ever, first annual review. Gave the form over to my manager and he read it for a long time and there was a silence. And I was starting to get nervous and he looked up and then he sighed and said, "You're going to have a really rubbish year, aren't you?" And I didn't know what to say. And he said, "But Chris, you've got here because all the great things you've done this year and we're really pleased with your performance. And yet all of those strengths you've ignored and you're trying to focus all of your effort on your weaknesses or development areas, as we call them there. And so what I just tried to say is, yes, you need to mitigate and have action plans for development areas, but let's make sure we celebrate our strengths." So that would be my bit.
Celebrating strengths, absolutely. Jo, what about your advice? What's the best piece of advice you've had?
So it's kind of similar, Chris, but it came from my dad before I kind of started work. I'd got a job and I was about to kind of go in there on my first day, and he sat me down and he said, what are you going to say to them? And I said, "Well, I'm going to say this." And he went, no, practice what you're going to say. And he said, "Joe, you don't sound very excited." And I said, "Oh, don't I?" And he said, "No." And he said, "And if you're not excited about your plan and about you, no one else is going to be either." And I remember taking that in to my first bank branch and kind of just making sure I looked positive and motivated. And I've tried to take that through my career as well, really. I've tried to think whether I've been doing a plan for something, whether I've been going asking for money for something, whether I've been trying to engage an excited team. If I'm not excited and engaged and there's not something fun in the plan, probably no one else is going to be either. So try and do that where I can.
Keep motivated.
Yeah.
Always. Chase.
Yeah, and mine's not on the same vein, actually. It was an interesting one, but I mentioned this only because I was listening to somebody giving this advice to somebody recently. And it was advice I was given when I first started working and actually moved into a role where I was required to manage my own time. So I'd started off as a trainee manager at Sainsbury's, which was very rigid time management. And then I moved into this role where I was expected to manage my own time and, you know, go to meetings. What do you do in a meeting? You sort of like attend a meeting. What am I supposed to do in these meetings? And this person said to me, "Just remember, you've got two ears and one mouth. You should use them in equal proportion." And only last week, our chairman was giving the advice to somebody else of going, "Just remember, you've got two ears and one mouth." And it is actually really, really good advice of saying, actually sit and listen, but do make sure you make a contribution. So you're there for a purpose. Always remember you're there for a purpose and say something, but listen to what other people are saying as well.
And would it be the same advice you just talked about that you would give now?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I'd be really clear with people who are saying, actually, you know, you go to meetings, we talk about it a lot at work. If you go to a meeting, you're there because you have a value. So therefore, just remember you have a value. You're invited somewhere, you're doing your job because you are valued to do it. Whatever level you're at, you're there for a purpose. So listen to what other people are talking about, build on their comments, but also make sure you do say something as appropriate. But genuinely listen, learn from things, hear what other people are saying, because nobody goes in anything perfect. Nobody goes in full of confidence. So sit and listen, absorb other people's knowledge.
We're going to be doing some mentoring later, and it's the power of those relationships, and the influence and impact that those people can have right at the start of your career. I was in the Royal Navy, and after 3 years, my commanding officer said to me, "You know, I think you should go through the officer programme." And I'm like, "Short Northern Bird? No, I'm not so sure I can, you know, I've got the skills to do that. I'd not done university, I'd not done," and that whole self-defeating imposter syndrome. But it was that guy who said, you know, "You can and you should." And it's, you know, and it's that kind of, not quite pushing you through the door and off onto the ship. But, you know, I think it's sometimes it's those things that just last with you forever, you know. But just sort of moving on in terms of your own personal development, what did you commit to in those early years that made a big difference? Tracy?
I think from a career perspective, I've always focused on things that interest me. So that's been the most important thing to me. So if it doesn't interest me or stretch me, it will not interest anybody else or actually have any validity for me as an individual. So I've always tried to focus on things that I think actually I'm learning something. And if I'm not interested in it, then I don't carry on doing it. You know, it's simple as that, because actually it's really difficult. And don't get me wrong, there's bits of everyone's job that are not interesting. We all have boring bits to do. But if the job as a whole isn't something that interests you, really don't go for it.
It's always point six on the job description, yeah, I think, yeah. Isn't it?
I mean, I can remember telling my children, actually, when they were choosing their A-levels, and the most bizarre thing of just going, it doesn't matter what A-levels you do. If you're not interested, you won't work hard. So I look at that in my job and say, I need to do a job where I like the people and I'm actually really interested in it. And if I can't do that, then I'm never going to be good at it.
And is that always possible? Because sometimes we all want to, you know, do what we love.
It's a difficult one. I make choices based on that. And so sometimes you've chosen jobs that are not necessarily the one that you would have thought you would want for career progression, but actually for personal progression, it's the great thing to do.
I think I think that's great, Tracy. I think when I reflect back on my early career, I didn't know I was going to join a bank. I didn't even really know what a bank did other than the cash machine at the time. And I certainly didn't know what I wanted to do or what I liked and didn't like. So I think my commitment was trying different things and learning from different people with different personalities and perspectives. And I didn't really realise I was doing that, but I was quite up for doing 6 months in this job or 6 months in that. And throughout that, I think you learn what your edges are, you learn what you're enjoying, you learn what you're not and what's not for you. And I think I'm still a generalist in terms of what I do, and I enjoy the variety that comes with that. But I only understood that because I like trying different things and moving on and keeping doing that as well.
Yeah, and I think for me, I remember one of my old HR partners used to call me a career opportunist, because when we talked about things, I never used to plan that far ahead, because I think the problem is if you're too rigid in your sort of personal development plan, whatever you call it, you set yourself up for disappointment, because you can't necessarily dictate when job offers come along and opportunities come along. But to the point Joe's making, I think what I tried to do was work out to take control of my career, because I realised it was my career and that no one company was going to sort of look after me forever. And so what could I do to make myself interesting, appropriately rounded, so that I could go and try different things? And so what I tried to do is just get that relevant experience. And I think the other thing is I tried to have a decent network of folk inside, because I started in NatWest, but also outside in the financial community, who saw me as someone who was hardworking and with the right attitude. And I felt that sort of sales tag of this: we know Chris is hardworking, he'll try anything and he'll put his back into it. That for me was the thing I wanted to be seen as, someone who would just get on and do things.
That'd be memorable. But did you make any mistakes? I think there is no one straight career trajectory for anyone in this room. You'll all have different paths, and you need to have your own path. You
know? I think one of the best examples of a really sort of massive mistake, I guess I would say, I made, and in the end it turned good. So I was working at KPMG, and it was at the time that RBS was just about to take over NatWest, and I'd left NatWest, I was at KPMG. I'd been working out at RBS as a client, and in partnerships you have a partner who looks after the job and all of that stuff. And so I had a partner, Mike Eaton, and he was then ring-fenced away from me because he was picked up by NatWest to do their defence case to try and keep independent. And then I was given another partner who then was ring-fenced away from me because he was put on charge of the Bank of Scotland buy team. And so I sort of left on my own. And we were all told, have a plan, because at the end of the bidding, one of the three entities, RBS, Bank of Scotland or NatWest, will win. Now, I was busy doing engagement work. I didn't really have much support. I was virtually the only person in KPMG looking after RBS. And I thought, well, everyone knows NatWest's either going to stay independent or Bank of Scotland's going to win. And, of course, at the last second, RBS won. And then everyone turned up and said, so where's your plan? And I had no plan. So I basically had to scurry around, and I just, luckily I had good connections in both companies, and I got on the plane, flew up to Edinburgh, saw loads of people, worked very hard, and within a couple of weeks we got a great plan. Actually, we were the first external consultancy to win work, and it became on to be the biggest account that KPMG had in finance services, which was just consulting. So it ended up great. But there were about 3 weeks in the middle where I thought I was going to lose my job. And so the advice is, always be prepared. Don't assume anything.
Yeah.
It served you well.
It has in the end. But
You've done okay, right?
Yeah.
Tracy, did you have something to...
So, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you know, I was talking earlier around making choices around things that interest you and stretch you. And I sort of count this as a mistake, but I learned a lot from it, so you can always bear this in mind. I went and took a job working in consultancy. I knew I was not a consultant. I'm not somebody who can sell things to people they don't need. And that's not being derogatory for every consultant out there. But the billable hours situation you have in consultancy is you go along and somebody says, I'd like you to help me write a short-term bonus plan. The expectation is you go along and say, but don't you need a long-term one as well? And couldn't you do with this? And couldn't you do with that? I'm not that sort of person. However, I took a job in consultancy sold to me on the basis they wanted experts. They wanted people who'd worked in business to actually go and do the work while other people sold. Should have known it was never going to last. So 9 months in, they're going, oh, Tracy, we need you to start doing billable hours. Awful, awful experience. I couldn't sell anything because I immediately felt really guilty, started telling people, and it's like the most ridiculous experience for me as an individual, thinking I'm not trying to sell things to people they don't need. And I convinced myself I was actually being really disingenuous to myself. It's an absolutely ridiculous way of behaving. I did resign 3 months later to go to do a different job, not in consultancy, but it was one of those things where I thought I should never have said I could try and do it. It just wasn't me, and I could never be convincing doing it. But I have to say, for 9 months, really good exposure to multiple industries. But learn when you should actually just switch off and go, it's not me.
Is there anything on your journey, Jo, that you've kind of gone through? Or is anything that you've learnt along the way that thought, oh my goodness, got away with that?
Every day. I think probably the thing that I wish I could have known earlier on was it's okay to really ask the dumb questions up front. In my early career, I felt like I had to put this veneer on, that I needed to know everything, I needed to be really confident. And yes, I had the answers for everything, but of course you can't. And I avoided asking what I thought was the dumb questions up front many times, and they ended up down roads I would never, you know, on projects and things I would never have gone down. And what I've realised as I've kind of progressed is really the more senior you get, that's all you do. You just ask the dumb questions and you're kind of allowed to. And that's just what you've got the licence to, because they are more strategic. But actually, I wish I'd have known that. I really do. Because I feared for what people would think of me. And actually, I shouldn't have really cared, because they were the right questions to ask.
Okay. Have we got any questions in our stellar audience?
So I just wanted to ask, for the roles that you guys do now, what was the starting point that led you on the path to where you are now? What was the first role that got you to where you are?
So what was that, like, jump point?
Yeah.
So what turbo-powered you, Chris?
So I guess the probably the most significant change I made, so I was in RBS and I have been for many years, doing a COO role within a big function. So I was working in corporate banking. So there was, you know, it was a very big function. There was a chief executive, but I also had a line to the COO of the whole bank. And really all I did was try to manage the politics between my business COO and what the big COO wanted to do. And all my job was trying to bridge gaps politically. And, you know, I didn't really have any, frankly, decision-making authority or anything like that. I mean, my budgets were something like 90 million and all that, so it sounded fantastic. But after doing it, and I've been doing it in different guises, because it was the period RBS was restructuring every sort of 1 or 2 years as it went through the sort of crisis period, I just felt I needed a change. And I applied to become the CEO of Ulster Bank, which was a fully owned subsidiary in Ireland, which had real autonomy. And lots of people thought I was mad, because I worked for this chap called Chris Sullivan, who ran corporate, I was on his exco, and to go to Ulster as COO, I'd be reporting to Jim, who also currently reported to Chris, so I'd step down a level. And lots of people thought I was nuts, also I was travelling a lot and stuff. But actually what it did was it gave me the first opportunity to have real end-to-end autonomy, to deal with the regulators directly, to lead a team, to build a strategy. And that really transformed my view of what I wanted to do, back to the point we don't always know. And at that point, I realised working for a company which is effectively around 4,500 people with real proper accountability was what I enjoyed and what I was reasonably good at. And so that's after my secondment to Ulster was up, that's why I applied to come actually to Manchester to set up Williams & Glynn. And that was a similar sized company. Unfortunately, we never got the technology from RBS, so it didn't happen. But I then took an interesting turn, because I wanted to do something for a bank which was sort of ethical, trying to do a turnaround and wanted to change banking for good. and I couldn't find anyone out there. So I took a short-term role at IBM, which is where I've come from. And then when I got the call from the guys up here saying we've got a role at Co-op Bank, I knew that was perfect. So at times, just to support what Tracy says, you do need to think about, well, what are you going to do? And for me, even though IBM was 450,000 people strong, I'm probably the most politically complicated organisation I've ever worked for. It taught me a huge amount around technology, trends. It exposed me to the whole UK banking industry and was a really helpful stopgap. But I knew that I really wanted to be a CEO because that's where I feel my skills are best deployed.
Brilliant. Jump points.
Yeah. So couple for me. So other people helped me. People took a chance on me, you know. And so what I would say is for those people you enjoy working with and you admire, keep those networks going over the years. It's hard to do that, but it's really rewarding. And, you know, if they think you're great, they'll think you're great in other things as well. So I would say that. And then the other quick one would be, Don't always think you have to stick in the same sector. Mm. So you heard I do some work with a local hospital. Your skills are transferable. You don't always realise that. So I think they give you springboards as well.
Tracy.
Yeah, and I'd echo Joe's comments there. You know, different industries are always good for you. They are good for you. And you can add something in any industry. I look at it and think, actually, the networking side of things is not a natural skill set for me as an individual, but I can absolutely say in two occasions that's what's actually got me jobs. So I took a career break back in 2011 and moved out to the Middle East with my husband and children for a couple of years. And I spent a lot of time while I was not working making sure I kept some networks up. And I came back, two phone calls, had a job working at Lloyds, never worked in financial services before that. And the job at Lloyds led to someone recommending me to the bank. Fantastic. Purely how I managed to do it. And I think you cannot underestimate keeping some connections with people and actually having that reputation that people know what you're about, what you're interested in, what your skill set is, and that they are comfortable then recommending you to other people.
Brilliant. And finally, just as I'm getting urged to wrap up, but I'm not looking over there, I'm not looking at it. So just one quickly down the line, who are your role models? Joe.
So there was a lady called Leslie, who I used to work for. She gave me my first big job. And one of the things she said to me, and I said to her, what if I make a mistake? She said, I won't let you make a mistake. I won't let you fail. And I just love that. And, you know, if I can bring that to anybody else, then that's great. I also love Judge Judith Scheindlin, for those of you who know. She's massively consistent, isn't she? And I've learned a lot from her. Guilty pleasure.
Tracy. We all love a guilty pleasure, absolutely. I think we're saying Judge Rinder. I thought you were going with Judge Rinder.
Yeah, that was really boring. So mine's a guy called Nick Reed, who's actually the CEO of Vodafone. When he first joined, he wasn't in a senior role. He joined when I was had only been there a short period of time. And his message to me always was treat everybody with respect. And he did, by word and deed. And I think it's just a lovely mentality.
Brilliant. Chris?
I guess mine's probably Mike Eaton from KPMG. It's hard to pick one. Mike was just a great leader of people, worked really hard, cared for his team. And this is back in the 1990s. He was gay and he used to bring his partner Sean to events, which were very difficult. You know, at that time, it wasn't something most people were doing. And he was so pleased and proud to be who he was. And he didn't mind showing up at work and being true to himself. And that taught me a huge amount, I think. Be yourself, bring your whole self to work, and then you can really enjoy life and you can change other people.
I think it's that being you is good enough. I think I've some great comments here today. So thank you so much for our panel. We always have a theme of every podcast, and I've written down a few here. And I think I love what you said, Joe, which is learn what your edges are. And I think that was brilliant. So thank you. A big round of applause for our panel here this afternoon.
A really big thank you to our panel and also the brilliant audience who came to join us at Stoller Hall. We'd love to hear what your best career advice has been or who your biggest role model is. Do keep the conversation going. You can use the hashtag NPWpodcast. Now it's time to hear from someone who's at the top of their game. And this month you'll hear from Leslie McPherson, Director of Communications at the Cooperative Bank. And stand by for some great career advice. We started by talking about what her role entailed.
There's kind of three aspects, actually. One is making sure that we are communicating effectively with all of our colleagues at the bank. So we've got around 3,000 colleagues across the bank in a number of different roles and geographical areas. So it's important that we keep in touch with them regularly. Secondly, I am responsible for all the external communications on behalf of the bank. So that's dealing with media, with politicians, other key external stakeholders who are important to us as a business. And thirdly, I lead on our corporate responsibility strategy. So cooperative values and ethics, and making sure that as a bank, we live up to our cooperative values every day and everything that we do across the bank. So quite a broad and varied role, one that I really enjoy every day. And I've been doing that since the summer of 2016. So coming up for 4 years, actually, and very happy years as well.
So coming up for 4 years, but I'm guessing so much of everything that you do has completely changed in the last 2 weeks. You're having to communicate now. Communication times 10, isn't it? I mean, goodness me, could you have even begun to prepare for how your job and life was going to change?
No, and actually, I mean, you know, most people in a communications role will have had some experience of communicating through a crisis. But I think the interesting thing about this, it's not a crisis that's confined to one business or one sector, or even to one part of the country, or even one part of the world. You know, this is a global pandemic that, you know, puts, you know, people's health in danger. And that's just so fundamental a risk and a threat to all of us that, you know, I don't think anyone could have possibly imagined what it would be like to operate a business or to respond, you know, as a communications professional or even on a personal basis to some of the challenges that we're all going through right now. What I would say, though, is in times like this, communication is clearly vitally important for companies and for all types of organisation. But never more so, you know, in a crisis like this. You know, clearly as a bank, we started to prepare for this as soon as it began to kind of come into view back in January. But, you know, we couldn't have prepared for what's actually meant, which is, you know, social distancing in specific locations, you know, staying at home, people home working. So absolutely, communication has become far more important to us as a bank than ever before.
Everybody right now is having the experience of finding a new way of communicating with colleagues. We say the word colleagues and we forget that we're talking about human beings here, and all these human beings have got completely different setups. Maybe they're at home alone, maybe they're at home with a large family, maybe they're a single parent, maybe they've got an older relative they're caring for. So suddenly you've got so many different criteria and so many different issues and challenges facing your individual colleagues. I mean, that must be hugely challenging for you to help them.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, we have kind of colleagues call it kind of there's two areas really. Colleagues who deal directly with our customers and who work in our contact centres and our branches, and then colleagues who are supporting those colleagues but perhaps working from home. Yeah. And as you say, you know, home working brings a number of different challenges. You know, first of all, there's the whole technology challenge of making sure colleagues can connect up and can, you know, frequently use video calls, Zoom or BlueJean or, you know, WhatsApp video calls to connect up with people around the business. But also just making sure that colleagues don't feel too stressed.
Yeah,
because you say, you know, people have families, the schools are closed. I know many people who I work with are having to look at homeschooling responsibilities at the same time as trying to do their jobs. Some of them may have partners who are also working from home. So, you know, somebody's working in the spare room while their partner's working in the study, or, you know, if they don't have a study and as most people don't, you know, well, somebody's at the kitchen table, yeah, somebody else is in the dining room, you know. It just, these challenges are ones that, you know, are very human challenges, you know, and often families aren't used to spending that much time together either. So, you know, really what we're trying to do in terms of our business is support people through this, and obviously accept that people are individuals and everyone will have different circumstances. But I guess in my role in leading communications, there's a number of things we've had to do differently. You know, just simple things actually are quite helpful. So, you know, we have an intranet for colleagues, so like an internal version of the internet where people can go for news and information. But actually, we've increased that to help us deal with this crisis. So people now get a daily bulletin straight into their inbox with all the key information that they need for that particular day, so that all colleagues feel they're up to speed with the unfolding situation and how the bank is responding. We've also been able to put in place an extranet. So that's something that colleagues who don't have a laptop or who aren't really able to work from home, but who might be at home self-isolating or caring for family, or who might be vulnerable, therefore having to stay at home, they can still access, you know, a lot of the information that the bank is giving out to colleagues through their home personal computer or their home mobile device. So again, just trying to make people feel included, and that although they might be working from home and not in the office, they don't feel isolated, and that we feel that we're going through this challenge together.
It's really interesting, isn't it, to think about how we're going to view the situation we're in 5 or 10 years hence. Because we talk a lot about resilience on this podcast, and especially during these interviews. And we talk to people about, you know, when there's a time you've had to really dig deep and find resilience. And in fact, this is probably it. You know, we're living it now. I mean, having, as you are, Leslie, someone who communicates with so many different individuals on a daily basis, have you found or taken on any great tips for, say, well-being or fostering a sense of resilience at this time? What can you share?
So I think one of the biggest things to have come out of this situation is the fact that people are communicating much more. So whether it's your family communicating more frequently and more effectively, I think. So, you know, I know my family's had a lot of WhatsApp video calls that we certainly didn't do. But actually, you know, we're all getting together more. I think there's more WhatsApp groups. I think there's more kind of digital meetups been happening at weekends, which is, you know, people have taken to that really, really quickly. And, yes, and I think it'd be quite interesting to see how that carries on after. It's a really interesting time. You're right. Resilience has never been more key. And I think that communicating and reaching out and being part of a group, even if it's a digital group, is really important. Yeah. But I think also, as well, for me, one of the most important aspects was the big show of appreciation that we all joined in with last Thursday, yeah, where the whole nation stood up and clapped their appreciation for the NHS. Now, that did two things in my mind. One, absolutely, it paid tribute to these NHS heroes that are delivering for us every day above and beyond. But it also brought people together with a sense of what's actually important. And, you know, I loved sort of seeing videos and scenes of people in Manchester, you know, clapping, whole tower block clapping, whooping, cheering. What an amazing moment for the country. And I think it's helpful for people to pour some of their anxieties into something constructive like that, where we recognise others and recognise the great work that's been done.
And what are you doing for your own well-being, Leslie, during this time? The challenge with working from home is that you're kind of never off. How are you finding time to switch off when you can't really leave the house very, very easily to go, right, work time is over, now it's leisure or family time?
Yeah, it is hard. I think I would say I find myself cooking a lot more healthy food than I normally do. So I think a lot of us are looking at increasing our fruit and vegetable intake just as a kind of response to try and boost our immune system. So I've been eating a lot more cooking from scratch, which I feel really proud about. And again, you know, I like reaching out to family members. We've been chatting on WhatsApp. We've been doing Zoom calls as a family a couple of times a week. That's been really great. You know, just recognizing that people are going through this in a lot of different ways, and even the people that you think are most resilient are often, you know, going through a hard time. Yeah. So just reaching out to people and taking the time to call people, just check in with them, I think that's really important to draw that line between your work time and your personal time, and just say, look, no, actually, this is really important. You know, family has never been more important, and friends have never been more important. And getting that balance right, I think, is key.
Do you think the business world is going to be a very different place when we emerge from this period of lockdown?
I think inevitably it will be. I think the massive changes that we've all just gone through in the last 3 weeks, you know, I can't imagine that it's going to just change back again to the way that we were. So, you know, I think home working, more digital working, I think that some people could see that as an opportunity. So people who perhaps have a long commute. And also, I think it gives business a sense of purpose and what are they there to do for the community. So yeah, I think that's something that could pervade as we move through this as well. I mean, it's hard to escape some of the headlines about the impacts on small businesses and the community. And we all know that, you know, the high street was already under pressure. But I think the good thing is the government has put in place a lot of support measures for small businesses and for the self-employed. And, you know, banks and other organisations are working together to try and support small businesses through this critical time.
And finally, Leslie, what advice would you give to somebody who is on their own, who's working from home, but would like to reach out to a wider network of people, I suppose? Is that possible at this time to still find those connections online?
I think it's more possible than ever before. You know, I think I see that a lot of that happening every day, you know, on social media, you know, people just generally reaching out more, people being more receptive. Mm. You know, I think, you know, there's never been a better time to reach out and connect online. And not only online as well. I mean, I've heard so many stories about neighbours looking out for each other, people that, you know, live in the same building, perhaps didn't know each other particularly well, but offering to do shopping and do good deeds. I think that's a wonderful thing. And I really hope that does last and outlast the crisis. I mean, I know my parents, who are in their 70s, were absolutely bowled over to be left a little bunch of treats on their doorstep on Mother's Day a couple of Sundays ago. And that was a lovely thing for my brothers and sisters and I to be able to think that people were looking out for them, even though we can't get there to support them. So, you know, a small gesture like that can be so powerful. And I hope that does inspire people to continue to be kinder in the months and years ahead.
Thanks very much to Leslie McPherson with some brilliant career advice there. It's time now for your Northern Power Women shout out. It's a great opportunity to give someone an audio pat on the back or just shine a spotlight on someone that you think has broken down a barrier, gone an extra mile, or faced a challenge at work. Let's have a listen.
My name's Claire Williams and I would like to give a Northern Power Women shout out to my best friend of 35 years, Fiona Smith-Layton, who works at GSK and is a real power woman.
Hi, my name's Wayne Bennett from Robert Walters, Business Director. I'd like to do a Northern Power Women shout out to Caroline Whitehead, who's my mentor and a fabulous lady and also a United Nations Global Goodwill Ambassador. She's just inspired me to be a bigger and better version of myself. And the second person is my mother, who has basically shown me how strong a person can be. And being the oldest of 10 with 6 sisters, she also shows me every day just how powerful women can be.
My name's Natalie Housby, and I'd like to give a great big Northern Power Women shout out to my colleague, Claire Clark. She supports me every single day and I look forward to coming to work every single day to see her smiling face and love being part of the team with her.
Hi, I'm Catherine. I'd like to give a Northern Power Women shout out to Helen, a former manager who gave me the best piece of career advice, which was always say yes to opportunities.
I'd like to give a Northern Power Women shout out to my dad. Always acted with the greatest integrity when I've seen him as I've grown up. Always made time for me and my 2 younger siblings, even though we had a really stressful job. Always made time to take us to football, do all the extracurriculum stuff, even though I knew we'd probably be rather doing something else. So it's now I've got my own children. It's something I'm trying to emulate as I get older. So yeah, shout out to my dad.
Hi, my name's Amy. I'm from a company called Doris, and I would love to give a Northern Power Woman shout out to my boss and mentor, Chris McHugh. She founded Doris 7 years ago, and she absolutely ploughed her heart and soul into it along with her business partner, and they've given me every opportunity that I could to progress, and I've said yes, and it's because of her that I am where I am today. So thanks, Chris.
Hello, I'm Sally Bucknell from EY, and I want to give a Northern Power Women shout out for Steve Varley, who is our Chief Executive Officer of EY in the UK, for his continued sponsorship and visibility around driving the diversity agenda for us. He is a true power man for women's equality.
Thank you if you took part in the Northern Power Women shoutouts this month. If you would love to give someone the credit that they deserve, all you need to do is record a voice memo on your phone, tell us who you are, tell us who they are, and why they deserve some recognition. Do you know, you can't underestimate how much it makes somebody's day to just get that bit of praise. So send us your message, please, podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Thank you so much for listening to this very special episode of the Northern Power Women podcast with the Cooperative Bank. Save the date. The next episode arrives for you on Monday, April the 14th. Yep, in these very strange times, the Northern Power Women podcast is now weekly, as Simone and I share notes, ideas and stories from the Northern Power Women Network. So come and say hello. Until then, this is the Northern Power Women podcast. I'm Sam Walker, and this has been a What Goes On Media production for Northern Power Women.